It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running for this, the 25th day of July, 2019. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That, of course, is also where you go if you would like to, among other things, join the chat room. The merry, wacky, multimedia, zany, real-time extravaganza that takes place in the 3 hours in which this program is live. From 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Monday through Friday, and from 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Hi, I'm Bob. And if you jump in right about now, you'll be greeted by the likes of Jimmy from the Great Northwest, and there's Silent R. Lamar. Otto is in the room, as is Squeaky, and of course, capably moderating, longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a third stage guild navigator, well, it's still no good folding into the center of folding space into the center of the sun. There in the man cave, I reckon it's right hot, as it is, you know, here, right muggy here today. We have a balmy 82 degrees in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by Cole Trump Virginia Stan. Yes. Sorry, I'm fiddling around with There we go. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa. Hot on both godforsaken streams. And that's wonderful. Just, you know, not having technical... Well, these days I got to get a new set of cans, but that's a different thing. But, you know, stuff's working. Good. And of course, it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and sometimes the thorns are ours, and sometimes the thorns belong to others. Let's start the program, shall we? You know how we got to start the program? With thanks. This program always begins with thanks, and thanks go out this evening to Kay. Thank you, Kay, and thank you to Mark. Kay and Mark are our 25th of the month subscribers. Thank you, Kay and Mark, very kindly indeed. Thanks for letting me know also to Steve in New York, who tells me, I just saw the notification, so it'll open up in a minute. Man, this thing's old. Steve in New York says, sounded good. The dispensopel and the flageolet are both running smoothly. Yes, kept cool and lubricated by the Knuton valve. Right. see, Steve? The Knuton valve may be slightly off. And as I was saying it, it landed, the Knuton valve. Yeah. Got a decent night's sleep after a very long day yesterday. I was worn right the heck out by the end of the day. not that I was, you know, toting that barge and lifting that bale or anything, but 6 a.m. to 9 p.m., 15 solid hours of media consumption. Well, it's like ice cream's good, but if you just sit there and try to take down a 5-gallon bucket of the stuff, you're gonna wear yourself out in the process. Mm-hmm. But I'm feeling chipper. I'm BT, bushy-tailed, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. But like I said, let's start the program with some fun. A thorn in the side, not for us, but for someone else. And when it comes to thorns in the side for someone else, there's no one better to get the thorn than Nitwit Nero himself. He done got punked. Ralph's up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Stan, let me know about this, as did Greg of the 13th of the month subscription from over in Ohio. I mentioned that when we talked briefly about it, it was where where Julius Geezer stood up and declared that he had an Article 2 that let him do anything he wanted to as president. That's definitely Mar-a-Lago Mussolini territory. Well, he said that in the course of a harangue to the assembled young people of TPUSA, Toilet Paper the USA. No, that's Turning Point, you. But no, I think it's better Toilet Paper, don't you? He said that in the speech to them, and he was standing in front of a projected slide of the seal of the President of the United States of America. Only it wasn't, really. It was a masterful piece of art that some subversive slipped in to the geniuses there at Toilet Paper USA. Glorious, simply glorious. I laughed about this ever since I first heard of it. There were two. One was a regular seal of the president, but the other projected up behind him the whole time he was speaking, as he, in his, well, butter-brained cluelessness, just continued to speak and talk about his Article 2. What made this subversive seal so special? God, it was, yeah. Well, for starters, instead of arrows, the eagle of the United States, the bald eagle of the United States, instead of arrows clutched in its claws, it was clutching golf clubs. And then, instead of the motto on the banner, A Pluribus Unum, out of many, one, was inscribed instead a motto in Spanish. My Spanish is, of course, terrible, but I'll take a run at it. 45, and I don't know the Spanish word for 45. It was numerals, anyway. 45, es un titere. The banner unfurled, of course, above the head of the eagle, and the eagle in turn, not our eagle, but the Russian, and by extension, oddly enough, because the goddess of irony is apparently a listener, I mentioned it last night, the double-headed eagle comes to the Russian coat of arms by way of the Byzantine Empire, and there it is, a double-headed Russian bald eagle. Time out. I'll be back. Well, so much for all of that. I'm just going to take a moment and say that doing this kind of stuff, you've got, you know, there's an order to it, and there's a sort of an energy that goes with it. And when it gets interrupted, just sort of blows everything to hell. And, well, that's kind of, you know, I know this is unprofessional of me, but it, when you're juggling, the trick is, if you drop something, make it look like part of the act. Right. Oh, where were we? Yeah, 45 is a puppet. And it did make me laugh. I'm just not laughing now. Over a double-headed Russian eagle. And, you know, the best part is that he had no idea it was there. It being ruthlessly mocked as a puppet of Russia, which, of course, we found out. Anybody who had read the Mueller report knew it, and knew it beforehand. But it was laid out in stark terms during yesterday's hearings with Robert Mueller. Meanwhile, the little punks at Toilet Paper the USA Well, a spokescreep for Toilet Paper USA said, "It was a last-minute AV mistake, and I can't figure out where the breakdown was, but it was a last-minute throw-up, and that's all it was. I can't figure out who did it yet. I don't know where they got the image from." So somewhere in Toilet Paper USA, there was a sleeper cell, a sleeper cell of patriots, or perhaps a patriot, who in that little moment did something for all the world to see and blistered it delightfully. Golf clubs instead of arrows, that's beautiful. On to the ugly mug. Or behind the ugly mug of the orangutan. I had a note from Darlene as I was getting into the story. Darlene said, "I know where you're going with this. The presidential seal. It was perfect." And thanks again to Greg and Ralphs for bringing it to my attention. It was perfect. Steve in New York observes, though, the seal, even if he did know, he wouldn't have noticed anything wrong. He probably would have commented on how nice the new logo looked. New logo in quotes. He has no idea. Remember, this is President Dunning-Kruger, who doesn't know what he doesn't know. It's a beautiful thing. Meanwhile, a note from Dave from the Blind. "Hey, Bob, Nitwit Nero is full of self-congratulatory bullshit. It's a good thing he was speaking to Toilet Paper USA. They probably wiped him down and patted him on the head and sent him on his way. I don't know why they call him the 45th president. There's only been 44 men to serve in the office. Grover Cleveland, bless you wherever you are. And if you're counting the man baby, it's 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Currently, the count should be 43 and a half because he's never been an adult in his life." That from Dave from the Blind. Yeah. Then, of course, it was another bad day because today has been, you know, the rest of yesterday was fallout from the Mueller hearings, and then that continued into today. And it turned into a bad day for perpetual butt of jokes, Meghan McCain, over on The View. They welcomed Intelligence Committee Chair Adam Schiff, who was politely treated by Joy Behar and the fun part came when it was Meghan's turn to talk. And, of course, we must remember, this is just a natural law of the universe. Everything is always about Meghan. But it's better done in her own voice. She didn't understand. You get the idea, she didn't really much understand what happened yesterday.
You have claimed for years now that you have a smoking gun of evidence of collusion. Your quote is ample evidence of collusion. You said that. But Robert Mueller and his investigation found that there was no collusion. So can you share with us right here, right now, on The View, the evidence that you have and explain why Mueller was wrong yesterday?
Well, first of all, Mueller wasn't wrong. Mueller started off by saying we didn't address the issue of collusion. So those who are saying no collusion,
well, what's your evidence?
Just wrong.
You've been saying that on TV
yes.
for years.
Well, I will tell you.
Yeah, how polite of him not to say, shut the fuck up and I'll explain, you moron. But he's a nicer person than that. See, her goal was to start talking, let him talk a couple of words, and then talk over him to keep him from doing that. because that's what the maggots do. And she can say she's never Trump, and she can flog her dead daddy's body till the cows come home, but she defends Trump at every turn.
I've also been saying, as you know, that the evidence is in plain sight, not hidden anywhere. And we went through that evidence. The Russians offered dirt on Hillary Clinton in writing and sent it to Don Jr. And Don Jr.'s response was in writing and said, as for your offer of foreign illegal help, I would love it. He accepted the offer. They set up an overt act in furtherance of that, the secret meeting at Trump Tower, and they lied about it. You have an offer of illegal help. You have the acceptance of that offer. You have an overt act in furtherance of that conspiracy. That is, I think, by any rational American's expectation, the personification of collusion. Now, Bob Mueller had a different question he needed to analyze, which is, can I prove each of the elements of the crime of conspiracy beyond a reasonable doubt? And as you know, well before the Mueller report, I was pointing out to the public, there's a difference between what we understand as collusion and whether you can prove all the elements of crime.
So would you consider yesterday a big win for Democrats? Would you consider yesterday a big win for Democrats?
I would consider it a win for the American people that they got to hear from the person who did the investigation. They got to hear, unfiltered by anybody else, what he found.
Perfect answer.
Is this a win for the Democrats? Is this a win for the Democrats?
It was a win for the Constitution. It was a win for the people of the United States. And Adam Schiff is far too intelligent to fall into some the dippy blonde trick such as Megan was trying to play. She was way, way, way out of her depth.
For the former director of the FBI and the special counsel to say, effectively, the president acted immorally, unethically, unpatriotically, and likely in a criminal fashion, the American people needed to hear. If you're measuring whether this is a success in terms of whether it brings us closer to impeachment or not, that was not my object with wanting him to come in. My object was to find out what work did you do, what conclusions did you reach, and what work do we need to do to follow up on counterintelligence or compromise information to protect the country.
Chairman, has it brought you closer to an impeachment inquiry?
I don't know. Because the facts that he testified were not new, they were from the report as we expected they were.
Oh, yeah, and the other one was Anna Navarro. That's who just asked that question. So Megan got to answer her question and then had to go and sit down. But remember, Anna Navarro is one of those never-Trump Republicans. So assuming, and this is just a general reminder, assuming that we do get to a point, either before or on January the 20th, 2021, when that horrible adipose jiggling bag of fears and resentments is no longer president, the Anna Navarros and all the other heroes of the never-Trump Republican resistance will go back to being the assholes they always were. And will go back to trying to do to America what they've been trying to do all along. They'll go back to shrieking about poor people eating food and having a conniption over people being able to go to the doctor when they're sick. WTF, subject line from David in South Carolina, Stan. Why does Meghan McCain defend someone who disrespects her own dad? How fucking awful can she be to disrespect her own father? I hate the use of the B word, so David says, I won't do that. But how? Why? And yeah, how awful? Back to the seal for a moment. Silent R. Lamar says, oh my goodness, just think, Bob, the SEAL could be the new SEAL if he wins a second term. Please, let's not enter the nauseating phase of the program quite yet. Flavio says, the doctored presidential SEAL was a freaking work of art. If I was any good at Photoshop, and I'm nowhere near good, that's the kind of work I'd like to do. Simply genius. Expert-level subversive trolling. Thank you, anonymous troller. Yeah, it's like the other day when Trump said that Devin Nunes should get the Medal of Honor. The Congressional Medal of Honor isn't given to members of Congress. But, well, if we're gonna pass out imaginary medals, let's pass one out for whoever the subversive member of the resistance is who did that seal. If nothing else, a cowbell. Shall we? Yes. David in South Carolina, stand in regard to Never Trumpers, said, these Never Trump Republicans on MSNBC keep saying that Democrats need to reach out to the people who helped elect Donald Trump, so they want Democrats to reach out to Russians? I know. No, it's those economic anxiety people. That's who that is. Right. Exactly. Ron and Raleigh with a note. Have you noticed, Bob, Meghan McCain really believes she can go toe-to-toe with people who are so obviously of superior intellect. I believe she also suffers from Dunning-Kruger syndrome. She has no idea that she's made to look like a fool every day on the TV show. That, in fact, that's her purpose there. Indeed. James in Illinois, McCain's daughter, learned to run a talk show by watching Fox News. Anna Navarro is one of a few Republicans who on CNN plays the part of the left Republican to the right Republican. Fair and balanced! Yeah, she's over on CNN. Well, I don't guess she's on CNN. Is she still on CNN anymore? But back when I remember her being on CNN, basically she was the Republican who wasn't Rick Bro-Fro-Mix Santorum. From Suman, why does Meghan McCain support the nitwit Nero? Come on, guys, you know this. Because the check clears. Exactly. And remember, it's all a game. I'm not gonna say who told me this story. I don't know but you can be hired to be a doormat. You can have, say, some idiotic white-wing talker on Fox, and you can be paid, and the check always clears, but there are certain rules. The white-winger always gets the last word, for instance. And you get to make your point, but you have to agree to lose every argument. And they will pay you handsomely to do this. The person who told me that story did not take up the offer. It was a little too... there was a little too much self-respect involved. Anyway, back to Adam Schiff's remarks. You know, this had a certain value relative to the American people. Getting to, because reinforcement is important. There's that old army saying that you tell them what you're going to do, you do it, and then you tell them what you did. It laws of primacy and recency. The things that people hear first, they remember, and the things that they hear latest, they remember. Everything else in the middle is largely by the wayside.
And likely in a criminal fashion, the American people needed to hear. If you're measuring whether this is a success in terms of whether it brings us closer to impeachment or not, that was not my object with wanting him to come in. My object was to find out what work did you do, what conclusions did you reach, and what work do we need to do to follow up on counterintelligence or compromise information to protect the country.
Chairman, has it brought you closer to an impeachment inquiry?
I don't know. Because the facts that he testified were not new, they were from the report as we expected they would be. I was, I think, very circumspect about what we would hope to get from the hearing on that issue. I tried an impeachment case in the Senate 10 years ago against a corrupt federal judge, and we convicted him. And I have a good idea, I think, about what it takes to get a conviction in the Senate. And I'm not the least bit sanguine about that. But the jury that I care the most about is the jury of the American people. And what message an impeachment that results in an acquittal in the Senate will leave for the future generations about this president's conduct.
But is that the right question to ask? Can I ask you, is that the right question to ask? Because you just went through the elements and the facts that we know that prove what you said was, you know, the perfect case for collusion. So if we've got those facts, if we've got that information, how do you justify to the American people not following up with an impeachment inquiry?
Well, the Constitution provides impeachment as a remedy. It doesn't compel Congress to act and impeach whenever there are grounds for impeachment. And I think we have to consider, what will an impeachment and an acquittal in the Senate say about whether this president's conduct is compatible with office, if the president can later make the claim, having been acquitted, that this is not impeachable conduct. So I do think about what message we are sending today, what message we're sending to the country, and whether it makes sense to go down that road knowing what the result will be. I'm keeping an open mind, but I have yet to be fully persuaded. And before we take the country through what will probably be a year-long certainly very centrally focused effort by the Congress, I want to make sure that it's the right thing to do for the country.
And may I add that he will present himself as a victim, and that may not play well. So the main thing is to get him out.
Let me ask you. There's no question.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let me ask you this, because Mueller made it very clear that Russia meddled in our elections. The Republicans haven't done anything to fix it. McConnell doesn't want to be bothered. Let's be honest. They are really helped by it. They're the party that Russia wants in power. How do you fight that? How do we stop foreign governments from interfering in the future? I mean, they're doing it all over the world, apparently.
Paper ballot.
Well, I mean, this is, you know, one of the other hopes of
Did you catch that? I couldn't quite tell, but someone off screen, not on her own mic, either said at the ballot or paper ballot. I thought it was paper ballot. Interesting.
Having Bob Mueller come in, which is to make the case why we need to protect our elections infrastructure, why we need to redouble our efforts, that the Russians have never stopped meddling and they're going to continue to meddle. And I think the reason why probably the most powerful moment in the hearing for me was when Mueller acknowledged that he's already worried that this is the new normal, that is, that American candidates are going to think it's okay to receive foreign assistance. And if we get to that point, then we are truly sunk. And, of course, the one who's rationalizing, normalizing all this is the president of the United States. We can only partially control what the Russians do. We can control, though, what we do.
Right.
And it's going to fall on the American people to say, you know, that's not okay here. And anyone who thinks it is needs to be voted out of office.
Here's the thing, Congressman. It's up to you all. This is in your hands.
Yeah.
This is in all of your hands, both the Republicans and the Democrats. You are sitting with the power to make this change. If you allow people to continue to break the law, continue to flout the idea that because there's some sort of mini new thing that someone's written in and they have decided they're not going to come and do what any other American would have to do, then this is going to be on your backs, because we can't do anything until y'all do something. So y'all need to do this.
Yep.
That was pretty profound on Whoopi's part. And every word she said was true. It is on them. Yeah, Darlene says, I heard paper ballot too. Interesting. Interesting. Paper ballots are good things, by the way. Flavio says, I feel so much better after yesterday. Madam Speaker Pelosi, Nadler, Schiff, et al. Seem to be hinting that pride goeth before a fall, and if I have to wait for that lard-ass to fall spectacularly on his ass, well then, it's well worth the wait. I understand now they're getting their ducks in a row. Okay. Good. And Flavio says, keep talking, Don. Keep talking. Oh, he did. He had a little Trumper tantrum today. And he had another little Trumper tantrum today. And, you know, it's, it, it, I we sit and we talk about it, but we don't actually have to make the decisions. It's a hell of a lot harder when you do. And so to that end, I would simply urge that we engage in the same level of deliberation, that we ask the same hard questions. And we asked a few of them during the front porch conversation last night, which, by the way, I thought was a scintillating discussion. And Adam Schiff touched on some of it. For instance, the idea that it's going to be a year-long process. Now, the trial in the Senate is only going to take about 15 seconds. There are rules, again, there are rules that say that it has to be, the case has to be tried if a bill of impeachment is sent there. But rules don't mean much to Mitch McConnell. Between him and Donald Trump, it's a neck and neck and oh what necks race to see which one is more un-American, which one is less patriotic, which one is more self-absorbed. And he doesn't get rules. Mitch McConnell don't need no stinking rules. He can just set a bill of impeachment on top of the stack of 350-plus bills that the House has sent over for the Senate to consider and which he refuses to have the Senate consider. Okay? And again, as I have pointed out, no one can make Mitch McConnell do anything. No one. He is, even more than Donald Trump, a law unto himself. Because the people of the state of Kentucky apparently have proven inept and unable to hold him to account. More on that in a minute. I'm sorry, this is one of those evenings. I'll be right back, damn it. Some days are diamonds. Some days are rocks. This one is apparently a box of rocks. Hey, but, you know, hopefully that was the last interruption and we'll go forward from there. Note from Darlene on what Whoopi said. Whoopi's kind of wrong. I say the American people need to get on board wholeheartedly with impeachment as well. The House needs to continue to educate the American people and come up with a hardcore fact-based reason to impeach, as Nancy Pelosi indicated last night. And then it's up to us to wholeheartedly push for the impeachment, conviction, and removal. It's that conviction part that remains the sticking point, but as I noted, referring to the Barbara Jordan clip that we had a couple of weeks ago, she points out that what the Senate does is not part of the House's consideration, and to that extent, they have a job to do. And if there are impeachable offenses, it is up to them to do their job, and then if the Senate does not do its, then that's on the Senate, not on the House. But the problem is, will the American people see it that way? Or will the, and maybe the finer point of that is, will the multimillionaire for-profit media present it to the American people in such fashion? And that is far from a foregone conclusion. Because the American for-profit multimillionaire media is hopelessly addicted to conflict and to the ancient concept of, come on, let's you and him fight. So I think we have to take these things into account. The House does its job, but the broader implications of letting him be a victim, if you convict him in the Senate and he's still hollering, I'm a victim, it doesn't matter because he isn't president anymore. And I mean, there are so many scenarios you can game out of this. Consider this one. I was thinking about this the other day. What if you impeach him and the Senate convicts him and Mike Pence says, no, I won't be president? Well, the easy answer is then Nancy Pelosi is. And I don't think she would flinch for a second in throwing the both of them out on their asses. But there's all kinds of weird possibilities because we are through the looking glass. We're down the rabbit hole. And there is no longer any such thing as normal. At least not where our governmental structures are concerned. I was wondering, asks Ron in Raleigh, were you as amused as I was whenever a Republican decried the wasted time that the investigation and hearings were taking and they desperately needed to get back to the important business of the American people? The Republicans would be foot-dragging even if there was no investigation or hearings. Of course. They're not in power. So even if Trump was some sort of wonderful president, beloved of the people, competent, intelligent, not crooked as a dog's hind leg, the Republicans, because they're out of power in the House, would still be doing everything within their power to keep anything from happening. And that was on display earlier today, which I also hope we will get to. But back to Mitch McConnell for a moment. And something that I think bears discussion. Up in D.C., thousands of coal miners went to the Capitol to demand that Mitch McConnell act, move, to restore funding for the Black Lung Fund. Now, because you're part of this community, you are probably more educated on things, on that sort of, those sort of respiratory diseases that are attendant upon the coal industry, that plague the coal industry, than your average American. This is an extraordinary, after all, ordinary conversation. The black, the tax that supports the Black Lung Fund was cut in half because Republicans. And it put the Black Lung Fund at grave risk. Of, among other, of becoming insolvent. And if that happens, then the people with black lung, well, they shuffle off toward a dark and miserable, dusty death. There's no cure for black lung. They're going there anyway. But you can at least ameliorate the effects, and you can provide economic support for the families. Black lung was part of my grandfather's demise. And till her dying day, my grandmother, who lasted, well, nearly 30 years after my grandfather died, well, she collected a black lung check every month. And she damned well deserved it. Because her husband was stolen from her by the coal industry. Okay. There are literally thousands of people whose lives are at hazard in Kentucky. And this is the part that just makes you kick furniture, tear at your hair, rend your garments, eat dirt, and run rabbits. There are thousands of people who depend on black lung in Kentucky. The Black Lung Fund. You know what they did 5 years ago? They went to the polls and cast a ballot in favor, again, of a man who utterly despises them, but who periodically will show up in front of a Kentucky state flag, or in some instances, a Confederate flag, which is also okay with those miners, and burble something, you know, narble, warble, coal keeps the lights on, blurble, boosh, coal keeps the lights on, narf. And they get all warm and fuzzy in their little dying hearts. And even though they know he despises them, and even though they know he is the primary reason that their lives have been further immiserated unnecessarily, they go to the polls and they vote for Mitch McConnell, and they say things to themselves like, well, at least he's protecting the unborn. And he knows how important Coe is. I'm really not trying to be a dick about this. And this is not the same thing as that age-old trope that just grates on my being, why do they vote against their own interests? It's not the same thing as that. it's an attempt to acknowledge, well, like the sign in the meeting room says, reality spoken here. And the reality is, those thousands of miners could make a tremendous difference if they only chose to. If they would go in their droves, and if they would have their family members and their neighbors go in droves to the polls and vote against Mitch McConnell, their problems would likely end. Or if not end, be broadly ameliorated. Democrats don't run around trying to cut the legs out from under people with black lung. That's a Republican trick. It's like the 9/11 fund. Two members of the United States Senate voted against that. It passed. I don't know if it's been signed yet. The House did its job eons back, relatively. Two United States senators voted against the 9/11 Victims Fund, largely having to do with diseases not all that dissimilar from black lung. Pulmonary diseases caused by toxic dust. Two senators from coal states. One of them was constitutional genius Mike Lee of Utah. The other was Rand Paul of Kentucky, who railed about the debt and railed about the deficit that he gladly and blithely voted to drive into the stratosphere so that the political donor class that supports him with their welfare payments could have a tax cut. As Steve in New York pointed out. But they got a tax cut, yeah. Will the people of Kentucky have the common sense to throw out Rand Paul? Probably not. Will the miners with the black lung go on their walkers and toting their oxygen bottles to vote again in 2020 for Mitch McConnell? Probably. And will a further question, will the Democrat who challenges Mitch McConnell actually put distance between him or herself and Mitch McConnell? I mean, the last viable challenger to Mitch McConnell, Alison Lundgren Grimes, well, she tried to be Republican light. And then she got into a pissing contest with Mitch McConnell over who could more thoroughly debase themselves in the name of coal. That's not a winning strategy. That's why she's not Senator Alison Lundgren Grimes. Because given a choice between voting for an imitation something or voting for the real deal, people will vote for the real deal. And so we have to take into account that if Mitch McConnell will not act on behalf of his own constituents who actively support him, he does real well in coal country, Eastern Kentucky, then we have little reason to consider that he might act in the interest of the Constitution he is oath sworn to uphold and to defend. Because, as noted, the Constitution right now is sort of smoldering on the verge of bursting into flame. And all these things have to be taken into account if we're going to talk about impeachment. But a little further on the black lung stuff, if I may. Because I put up an essay over on Facebook about it. You may or may not have seen it, I don't know. But it has to do with the Black Lung Fund. And it has to do with those miners. And it also has to do with American ignorance. Not stupidity, that's not me being insulting. To be ignorant of something is to be uncognizant of it. To be unknowing of something. Ignorance is curable, stupidity is not. Ignorance is the state of being in an uneducated form. And I'm not going to raise hell and be a dick about it. But it does frustrate me that we talk about coal miners as if they are the only people who suffer at the hands of the coal companies. The coal miners want their black lung funding back. The coal miners want enhanced and elevated regulations regarding exposure levels, in particular, to silica dust. Because it is that silica dust exposure that brings on the most toxic, virulent, and deadly form of black lung. And black lung doesn't just happen in the underground mines. It is shockingly elevated on surface mine sites as well. Because in many ways, those places are dustier than the mines themselves that have massive ventilation fans and dust curtains and things to keep the dust supposedly away from the miners. Not a lot of that on a mountaintop removal site. And so mountaintop removal demolition workers have elevated levels of black lung that researchers frankly didn't expect to see. But they want their black lung checks. And they want their black lung coverage. And while they were in their thousands in Washington, D.C., I guarantee double T you, not one miner said so much as one, made so much as one little grunt about their victims. They themselves are victims, but it literally rolls downhill. The victims of the coal industry have victims themselves. You know this, of course. You know where I'm going. Because every blast that goes off on a mountaintop removal site sends a vast and toxic cloud boiling down onto communities below, where people who don't get a check for going to work for the coal industry, who did not volunteer to be associated with the coal industry, who were not handsomely paid $50, $60, $70, $80, $90, $100,000 a year to do what they do, breathe the same toxic filth. The coal company simply says that these people do not exist and that if they do, they're certainly not getting sick because of anything the coal companies are doing. And the coal and the coal workers who are conjoined with the coal companies, so no. And people continue to go to the hospital and go to the morgue. And the only people speaking up for the health of the victims of the coal industry who do not work for the coal industry, well, one of them's talking right now. Not bragging. It's just a fact. Because I am a part, as many of you are a part, of the Appalachian Community's Health Emergency Campaign. And the AKE campaign is the only organization. It is a project of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. It's the only organization that's out there saying, what about the people who live below and with the toxins and the poisons, the dusty death purveyed by the coal industry? Not one of those thousands of miners, and probably not one of the writers who wrote about it, have any idea that there's a bill in the House of Representatives that would begin to provide relief to the innocent victims of the coal industry. And I think we all know the abiding respect that I have for Charlie Pierce, for instance. But I doubt if he knows about H.R. 2050. I doubt if he knows about the near decade-long struggle to get relief for the victims of mountaintop removal. John Stewart was impassioned in his advocacy for the victims of 9/11. I'll bet he doesn't know that 1,000 people in West Virginia alone die every year from the same dust-borne diseases that kills and continues to kill the people in New York for whom he so passionately advocates. I will not go so far as to say that neither of those people care. I would like to think that if they knew, they would. And what a powerful statement it would make if we could all band together and understand and come to the common realization that the coal industry is a gang of homicidal maniacs. I'm talking about the coal companies, the bosses, the people who, when the bankruptcy goes through, get those retention bonuses while the health care and the pensions are stripped away from the working people. How Republicans support for things like fiscal accountability is just another way of saying, fuck off and die to people like the first responders who waded into the filth on September 11th, 2001. The United Mine Workers of America, as I noted, wants enhanced standards, increased protection against airborne particulates, and they want it for their members. But if you ask them, what about the people below the sites that breathe these things too, they say, well, fuck them. They ain't members of our union. Fuck them. They ain't really getting sick like we do anyhow neither. Because they deny the science. No surprise for a union that's actively engaged in denying that the climate crisis that they help cause exists, but nonetheless, I think it has to be made mention of. It's tragic and it's disturbing. And you just, you scratch your head and you wonder. And the only thing we can do, as far as the 8 campaign is concerned, the only thing we can do is keep working. And we've made more progress in the last few months than the bill has made in 7 years because we have people who want to see the bill passed. We have legislative heroes like Raul Grijalva, like Adam Schiff, who is busy, as I said, as busy as he was the minute that the AIC Act was introduced, signed on as an original co-sponsor. We have a handful of heroes. We need more. But I mention this because it dovetails with a theme from the impeachment discussion. It's a matter of education. The American people have to learn in order to be able to participate in their own self-governance and in order to be able to advocate for their fellow citizens. We have to be ringing phones and knocking on doors. We have to be telling members of Congress that we want the bill, we want them to co-sponsor the bill, and that we want them to vote for the bill, and we want the bill to pass. Yeah, I know, Mitch McConnell. But again, that is no reason for the House not to do its necessary work. I hope you share that sentiment. And I'm deeply grateful to those of you who do reach out, who do support the AIC campaign, who call your member of the House, who have called senators in the past. I appreciate it more, perhaps, than you can know. Because, again, it's not quite on the par with riveting steel 70 stories in the air. But it is exhausting work in its own way. Hell, probably most of the people that we're advocating for don't know. That the bill exists. And I don't blame them, because when you're being when your family is torn apart by disease, it's hard to get out there and pursue knowledge, because every day is a struggle against the diseases, against the horror, against the tragedy, and against the grief. So, I don't know how you teach people to stop being in abusive codependent relationships. But there is no doubt in my mind that, for instance, the families of coal miners in Kentucky are in one where Mitch McConnell is concerned and where Rand Paul is concerned. I remember when Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, I'm rich, I'm comfortably well off, I'm socially secure, said, I don't think anybody much minds blowing up a few little hills here and there in Kentucky. Because he did. He said that. Kyle says, Bob, you're trying to make sense of Republican voters voting against their own self-interests again. I said I wasn't. It makes perfect sense to them because as long as they're black, illegal, alien, LGBTQ, communist, socialist, fascist, snowflake, Hillary-loving neighbor across the street got screwed too, just like them or worse than they did, well, they're okay with it. I wonder how it's going to be Hillary and Obama's fault when the Black Lung Fund goes belly up and the black lung checks don't come anymore. How's it going to be the goddamn DNC's fault? I haven't quite sorted that out yet. Lady B. Oh, wait, Lady B. I'll play devil's advocate. What do you say to the person who thinks, why should we care? Those people keep voting for folks who tell them this work and the lives they live make them the true sons and daughters of the land. You children of God power the friggin' country. You work for a living. Inner city blacks and Mexicans are taking food from your mouths. Vote to keep shit this way and suffer gladly because your reward is in heaven. Again, devil's advocate, Bob. Some New Yorkers probably feel y'all did this to yourselves. Caring about humans for humanity's sake isn't profitable. And there's probably an element of truth in it. Wish it wasn't. But no, we're not doing this to ourselves. Because, well, the coal companies are the ones that buy all the ammonium nitrate and the fuel oil. But certainly some of us are willing accomplices. Perhaps past willing and a lot nearer to eager. And that's where the job of education comes in. David in South Carolina Stan says, sadopopulism. It is called sadopopulism. A combination between sadism and populism. There's probably just a shit ton of truth in that, too. Sadopopulism. David adds, you know, Trump despises his base voters too. Yeah. So here we are. There we go. This is, you know, these are the questions of the era in which we have been dealt a hand of cards. How do we go about the business of teaching our friends and neighbors just exactly what is being done to them and what the risks are and what it means for the fate of a failing nation? maybe you've got the answer to that. I, at this point, do not. But working together, maybe we'll get a little closer to it. Best I got. You want to engage in a little conversation? The lines are open if you do. Toll free on the stress line, 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. Over on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, spelled just like it sounds. And like I said, they're both open and just ready and willing and waiting for you. If you want to jump into the discussion. What's that? Dave from the line says, have some joyful news. I hear you talk about union membership and how important it is, whether it's coal miners or food workers, telephone cable splicers like my old dad was, or whatever the labor is, we must celebrate. Today, after 45 years in food service, my beloved ex-wife Christine started a new job at Kroger in the deli here. It's her first day as a union member, and I'd like to mark the occasion, and everybody who's been in and benefited from a union, get up there and talk about it. Congratulations, Christine. Congratulations. Mighty happy for you. That is wonderful, wonderful that you're able to be finally in, I guess, what would it be, the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, UFCW? Good union. Okay, what else for a thorn in the side Thursday? I'm wandering around a little bit. Oh, you know what? I screwed up last Tuesday and filibobstered right through the Green News Report. I'm not going to let that happen again. Let's do check in with Brad and Desi, shall we? Yes.
It's Thursday, July 25, 2019.
Temperatures are already starting to soar in Spain and Portugal, France especially.
Europe grapples with second historic heat wave in a month. Trump EPA approves pesticide known to be lethal to honeybees. Disappearing glacier in Iceland gets a memorial plaque. Plus,
Ohio has become the next state to bail out its nuclear plants through added fees to consumers' electric bills.
Lucky Ohioans get to bail out unprofitable nuclear and coal plants.
Republicans picking winners and losers and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Despite what they tell you, the science is not settled.
Oh, that is darling, Tucker Carlson. Remember when Fox News used to say that sort of thing?
That was last week.
This is your Green News Report. I'm gonna soak up the sun. Okay, Desi Doyen, the record heat wave in the U.S. has dissipated a little bit, at least for now, but it's returned to Europe, it looks like.
Yes, unfortunately, it has. Europe is grappling with its second historic heat wave so far this summer, again shattering records. The Netherlands, Belgium, and Germany have all now set new national all-time high temperature records just this week, with more all-time highs expected to fall in coming days. Cities across Europe have launched emergency measures and protocols to protect vulnerable populations in the heat, which were developed and adopted after the historic heat wave in Europe in 2003 that killed more than 70,000 people. Weather forecasters say it is very unusual to break new all-time heat records in mid-July because it's already the hottest time of the year, and it is especially unusual to break them by such large margins. Climate studies show that heat waves are increasing in frequency, severity, and duration due due to man-made global warming. In a press conference in Brussels, Claire Nullis of the United Nations World Meteorological Organization said these extreme weather events are direct symptoms of climate change.
Heat waves do bear the hallmark of climate change, and they are, as we saw in June, they're becoming more frequent, they're starting earlier, and they're becoming more intense.
Meteorologists forecast that the intense Europe heat wave will shift to the Arctic, where it is expected to accelerate the melting of sea ice, which just hit a new record low for this time of year. The loss of sea ice in the Arctic is both amplifying warming in northern regions and slowing down the jet stream that drives these extreme heat events.
And that's terrible news, because a new report out finds that over the past month, since June, there have been about 100 wildfires raging in the Arctic, releasing carbon and making everything much worse. All thanks to our climate crisis.
Meanwhile, here in the U.S., lucky electricity customers in Ohio will now get to shell out more than $1 billion in higher electricity rates to bail out two unprofitable nuclear power plants and two polluting coal plants, all owned by one company, First Energy Solutions.
Well, who is the socialist governor who has agreed to do that in Ohio?
That would be Ohio's Republican governor, Mike DeWine, who, along with Ohio's Republican-majority state legislature, signed a new law this week that forces customers to subsidize the aging plants that cannot compete against cheaper, cleaner natural gas and renewables. The bill also cuts funding for energy efficiency programs that save consumers money and phases out renewable energy standards for utilities, which Democratic State House member David Leland says is costing the state jobs.
We're losing 100,000 clean energy jobs because of this bill, and we're losing $5 billion in savings because of the elimination of the energy efficiency.
Now, just to be clear here, remember when Republicans said we can't afford clean, renewable energy because we have to subsidize it? And here they are subsidizing coal and nuclear over cheaper, cleaner, renewable energy.
Bad news for bees. The Trump Environmental Protection Agency has dropped restrictions on the use of a powerful pesticide that is known to be lethal to honeybees. At the same time, the U.S. Department of Agriculture announced it has suspended a program that monitors the health of the U.S. honeybee population. Last year, U.S. beekeepers lost nearly 40% of their honeybee colonies. That's the worst on record.
That just days after the Trump administration once again refused to ban a pesticide that gives brain damage to children.
Finally, in a world first, a dying glacier in Iceland is about to receive a memorial plaque so that future visitors will know where it once stood. The rapidly melting glacier once covered 6 square miles, but now no longer qualifies as a glacier. The scientists erecting the marker say they wanted to memorialize the disappearing ice field. They say it won't be the last. The plaque bears the inscription for future generations, quote, "This monument is to acknowledge that we know what is happening and we know what needs to be done. Only you know if we did it."
This is all going very well. For much more on all of our stories and the ones we could not get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Oh, it's too hot, too hot, too hot, lady. Gotta run for shelter, gotta run for shade. It's too hot, too hot.
Oh, and thanks, by the way, to Flavio for an update on the story that began our program this evening, namely the delightful modified presidential seal that was behind Geezer Disgustus when he talked to those perky young kids at Toilet Paper USA. That didn't take long. Turning Point USA aide fired after Trump speaks in front of doctored presidential seal at their Teen Student Action Summit Tuesday. A source familiar with the incident told CNN the altered seal was simply a Google search gone wrong. The doctored seal showed a two-headed eagle like Russia, yada, yada, yada. We're sorry for the mix-up and meant no disrespect to the White House or the president or the advance team, Toilet Paper USA said in a statement. adding that there was zero malicious intent. The source told CNN the fired staffer was in the audiovisual department and did a Google search for a high-res presidential seal, not realizing that the image chosen was doctored. The White House blamed Toilet Paper USA for the mix-up, with an official saying, we never saw the seal in question before it appeared on the video. For anything further, you would need to contact Toilet Paper. It was their event. Which is another way of saying, well, you know, Donald Trump's dumber than a handful of hammer handles, and he wouldn't know the difference between a real seal and a trained seal. Balancing a ball on its nose. Hey, well, yeah. But then again, those perky kids at Toilet Paper USA, for the most part, you know, upper middle class white kids. Apparently, they're not getting their parents' money's worth in those fine private schools and church schools and academies and so forth. Because, well, really? You don't know that the seal of the President of the United States is an eagle with only one head? How's about that? Yeah. Well, somebody's been sacked. But, you know, you don't sack somebody for an innocent mistake. They're still not admitting that they got trolled. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, going back to Dave from the Blinds, announcement about Christine getting her first union job. James, good union man, Illinois, says, "Welcome to the family, Christine." Indeed. Thank you, James. Thank you. James adds, by the way, in regard to the honeybee story from the Green News Report, "Would we be ahead of the game if we just allowed the rich to say they owned the honeybees? Maybe then they'd see a value in protecting them and saving both of our species." Well, I suspect the rich already think they do own the honeybees. They think they own the fucking planet. And I mean, it's not like they're trying to kill the honeybees. It's just that it's an effective poison for killing other things that just happens to be very effective for killing honeybees, you know, too. Yeah, and for that matter, adding to the educational failure of those perky kids at Toilet Paper USA, Steve adds, "Who knew the Eagles weren't holding golf clubs? I mean, they played golf had been invented by the 18th century. Now, I'm sure Jefferson, Franklin, and Adams, and Washington, and the rest spent many a happy hour on the links." Worth remembering that instead of the bald eagle, which prefers not to fight anything its own size and would prefer to eat carrion as opposed to doing the work of actually hunting things, Franklin wanted the wild turkey to be the national bird. Far smarter than an eagle. Swift, evasive, noble with that proud fan of feathers. But then, where would the American liquor industry be? I mean, really, do you think bottles of Bald Eagle 101 would fly off the shelves? Yeah, me neither. Yeah, who knew it wasn't holding golf clubs? I mentioned earlier that there was a Trumper tantrum earlier today. It happened when a reporter, and in the past I've mentioned that one of the only ways that we have of getting some sort of satisfaction relative to the nitwit Nero is if people confront him directly with his own lies and bullshit. Well, mirabile dictu, that happened. It happened today. And it was a reporter. God, this is rare as hen's teeth, but it was a reporter for CBS. Here's the coverage. Well, you know, at least I hope. No? Not gonna? All right, let's try it some other way. Because this is a moment not to miss. It took place out on the lawn. And it had to do with Republican Ken Buck's screw-up yesterday when Mueller wound up telling him that, yeah, the president can be indicted after he leaves office.
President Trump mocked Robert Mueller's testimony, and he called it a disaster. Paula Reed is at the White House with more on that story. And Paula, before you get to that, I have to say you had a very tense exchange with the president yesterday. A lot of people watch it live on CBSN. I was wondering what was going through your mind. Good morning to you.
Sorry, yesterday, not today.
Good morning. Well, I asked the president about former special counsel Mueller's statement that the president still could face criminal charges once he leaves office. The president became quickly very agitated. He insisted that Mueller never said that and even suggested that Mueller had recanted. But Mueller did say this twice and never took it back.
So we had a very good day today.
President Trump seemed pleased with the Mueller hearing.
When you ask that question, you're untruthful.
But quickly turned defensive when CBS News mentioned one of Mueller's few definitive statements.
Mueller said you could be charged once you leave office.
No, he didn't say that. Again, you're fake news, and you're right at the top of the list also. Let me just tell you.
That is what he
go
said,
go back
sir.
To what it's
he
not
said
what he
sir.
Said.
That is what
read
he said.
His correction.
That was not
read his correction.
His correction.
The president's claim that he couldn't be charged was wrong. Mueller did not correct this statement.
Could you charge the president with a crime after he left office?
Yes.
You believe that he committed, you could charge the president of the United States with obstruction of justice after he left office?
Yes.
President Trump believes Mueller's testimony may even help him get reelected.
The Democrats thought they could win an election like this. I think they hurt themselves very badly for 2020.
Still, the hearing appeared to have gotten under the president's skin.
I think Robert Mueller did a horrible job, both today and with respect to the investigation.
Though he's had a different take in the past.
It was the most thorough investigation probably in the history of our country.
Jesus. You know, everything he says, there's an opposite statement for it somewhere. Right. But what's that mean? You're on the list. What list? You got a hit list? You got an enemies list there, Fat Nixon? On the list. Stay off small aircraft there, Ms. Reed. It would probably inure to your benefit. Robert in Australia writes, national bird, the turkey, national motto, gobble, gobble, gobble. July 20th, 1969, the turkey has landed. That just doesn't sound right. maybe we wouldn't feel that way about a turkey. Maybe people would have been, as the American slang developed, maybe people would have been called jive eagles. Maybe the Philadelphia football team would be the Philadelphia Turkeys. And their modern manifestations of their helmet would be all iridescent. But we need more reporters like Ms. Reed, and we need to confront him and push him at every opportunity. I think. Oh, by the way, I mentioned my Mike Pencilneck Geek earlier. And I think it was Monday when we were talking about the $35,000 a couple fundraiser at the gay-owned club in Aspen, Colorado. Now, it's no surprise the vice president is a cheap asshole. You know, I've joked with people who, servers at, like Bob Evans over in Fayetteville, they hate working the Sunday lunch shift because that's when the Baptists come in and they leave you a dime under the coffee cup, or they'll write you a Bible verse and tell you to get saved as a tip. Well, that's Mike Pencilneck geek territory. They had their $35,000 a couple fundraiser at the gay-owned club in Aspen. Well, Pitkin County, Colorado Sheriff Joe DeSalvo's pissed. He says, you raised $700,000 in an hour, you should be able to pitch in to support the community that made you feel welcome. The vice president made no attempt whatsoever to cover the $24,000 bill that local law enforcement ran up for security and said, and didn't even give an address where to send the bill. And so Pitkin County, Colorado taxpayers are going to take it in the shorts. The sheriff said, we had a SWAT team from Garfield County here that I want to see get reimbursed. We had a Carbondale officer. We had Carbondale officers here that I want to see reimbursed. They don't have this kind of money. I don't have this kind of money. Wait. Are we still talking about one of the wealthiest areas in Colorado? Sounds like somebody's taxes aren't high enough. But nonetheless, the White House should be paying for this. Sheriff DeSalvo continued and said, we had 64 total police officers on that assignment in the 20 or so hours that he was here, totaling 519 person hours. Out of those 64, 14 were state troopers, and we don't have a responsibility to pay them, but the other 50 cops that were here are all on the county dime. I guess the whole thing's generally just somewhat disappointing to me. I'm concerned we're going to get stiffed. Trying to be bipartisan, County Commissioner Greg Poshman said, it was disturbing to me that candidates from both parties blow into town, collect a briefcase full of cash, and then blow back out again without ever really doing any public outreach. Mike Pence was just here and cost us a lot of time and effort when everyone was stuck waiting for his way oversized motorcade. Oh, dear. That's going to sting. To go through. He could have driven through in a Jeep with a hat and sunglasses and nobody would have noticed. Ouch! He went on and said, does our sheriff really need to call up and make a strong suggestion that they pay their bill before they leave town? It doesn't sit well with me. And I'm guessing it doesn't sit well with the community either. Cheap bastards. But then again, we're talking about a vice president for a president who is notorious for having spent his entire miserable, misbegotten lifetime stiffing people. Ripped from the pages of the headlines, it kind of vibrated in the news cycle for a few minutes today that Jeffrey Epstein, kiddie rapist, not even alleged, he's an admitted kiddie rapist, child, little girl rapist. He's a convicted sex trafficker. Well, they found him on the floor of his jail cell Wednesday. According to NBC, officials think it could have been a suicide attempt. But, he was found curled up in the fetal position in his cell, and I guess, had some marks on his neck. But one person speaking to NBC said, yeah, the injuries weren't much. They were light. They were minor. It was probably it could have easily been a pathetic attempt to get sent to a better facility. Or at least get a better prison cell. Yeah, I hope it didn't hurt too little. Apparently, he has contact there with another inmate, a former police officer who's doing time for murder and drugs. That person has been identified by some as Nicholas Tartaglione. He got busted in December 2016. He killed four men in a drug distribution conspiracy. Yeah, a cop. Meanwhile, his lawyer says, no, his client didn't attack the financier, Epstein. Really? The financier? That's the reference we're going to use for a... No, his client did not attack the convicted kitty rapist and sex trafficker. The killer cop and Epstein get along quite well, according to the lawyer. Uh-huh. The lawyer by the name Bruce Barkett said, they're in the same unit and doing well. It's absolutely not true that my client assaulted Jeffrey Epstein. I mean, they worked together to try to get and complain about the food and the conditions. Nonetheless, Jeffrey Epstein is now on suicide watch in the facility. You know, I prefer to think that, no, that's just too ugly for me to say. I'm not going to do that. No. Oh, and are you aware that there's a challenger to Ilhan Omar for her seat in the House up in Minnesota? Well, there is. And, you know, of course. Report out of The Guardian on Danielle Stella. She announced in an effort to raise some money that she's going to go after Ilhan Omar. She called her a criminal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it turns out that I guess you might argue takes one to think you know one. Because Danielle Stella is charged with boosting more than $2,300 worth of stuff, comprised of 279 items, from Target. She also boosted $50 worth of stuff from a grocery store. It's alleged that she did it at the self-checkout line. Mm-hmm. Among other things, Danielle Stella said that Minneapolis is the crime capital of our country. Mm-hmm. And is also, according to a spokesperson, a big fan of QAnon. Why, that's just about the trifecta, isn't it? Describing the shoplifting charges, she said, "I am not guilty of these crimes. In this country, I'm innocent until proven guilty, and that is the law. If I was guilty of crimes, I would never run for public office, putting myself in the public eye under a microscope to be attacked by all political sides." Yep. She's looking at 5 years in the stir and a $10,000 fine. James in Illinois says, Epstein, they should fix him up with some real nice sheets, real strong type, and a nice strong hook to hang his plush robe from. Oh, and after yesterday's press conference with which we began the program, an interesting statement from Representative Catherine Clark, a Democrat from Massachusetts. The community may find this encouraging. Congresswoman Clark said, "Throughout his life and presidency, Donald Trump has proven himself unfit to serve. He has no respect for the rule of law, has put kids in cages, regularly tramples on the Constitution, and uses racist words, acts, and policies to divide our country. Since the release of the Mueller report in April, it has been clear that the president committed impeachable offenses by welcoming interference from a hostile foreign power in the 2016 election and then attempting to obstruct the investigation into his unpatriotic actions. Moreover, he said he would do it all again if given the chance." All of our efforts to put the facts before the American people, however, have been met with unprecedented stonewalling and obstruction. That's why I believe we need to open an impeachment inquiry that will provide us a more formal way to fully uncover the facts. An impeachment inquiry is a process, not an outcome. But I fear there is no amount of wrongdoing that we could uncover that would convince the Senate Republicans to hold the president accountable. We can't allow Republican inaction to prop the door open for thieves to steal an election. We must be relentless in exposing the truth, act to protect our national security, and ensure that every single eligible American can vote without foreign interference. Good for her. Add Catherine Clark to the heroes list. Yeah. Oh, speaking of Jeffrey Epstein, there's some further creepiness afoot. You know, the whole thing got reopened and blown open by brilliant journalistic work by the Miami Herald's Julia K. Brown. She's the one that exposed the filthy little plea deal that Alex Acosta worked out when he was U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Florida. Well, now, a state senator, a Democrat from Florida, Lauren Book, has asked the Capitol Police there in Tallahassee to investigate a warning that she anonymously received. Because she has asked that the state look into the behavior and treatment of Epstein by Palm Beach Sheriff Rick Bradshaw. You know, the work release that Epstein was on when he was serving out his cushy sentence, where he spent most of his time in his Florida office, where it turned out he continued to set up sexual liaisons with young women. State Senator Book has a history of being a tireless advocate for the children, for children who have survived sexual assault. The anonymous threat that she received with one person telling her, "Little girl, you don't know what you're getting into. You need to just stop." That's creepy as hell. But shouldn't it be investigated? Because I'm pretty sure everybody that goes into the Palm Beach County Jail doesn't get work release to go and hang out in their office and get laid. I mean, I'm certain of it. Meanwhile, the Palm Beach Sheriff's Office is apparently not terribly good at this. They said they had nothing to do with any of it. And then they sort of gave something away that, it's not a good thing when you're trying to protest your innocence that you bring up something nobody else was talking about. Yeah, we didn't have anything to do with it, nor has Palm Beach Sheriff's Office made any effort to access her phone or emails as alleged on a salacious website run by a disgruntled former employee. She wasn't talking about that, Sheriff. It didn't have nearly the drama of yesterday, but the work of Congress continued today. In this case, in the House Government Oversight Committee, Jim Shorts Jordan was having a tough time of it. Yeah, you know, he's probably not feeling very good these days because he's been named in yet another lawsuit that charges him with having looked the other way while boys, young men in his care were getting raped by the Ohio State University wrestling team doctor. Yeah, he got his hypocrisy aired out for everybody to see today. A colloquy between Jamie Raskin, who is new to the House, and a proud co-sponsor of the AIC Act, by the way, and Jerry Connolly. They were engaging in a colloquy between, also Mr. Connolly, a longtime sponsor of the AIC Act. And their topic was, well, Jim Shorts Jordan.
I'm delighted to yield to my friend from Virginia.
I wonder, would it surprise my friend from Maryland to learn that just a few years ago in this very committee, the distinguished ranking member, Mr. Jordan, actually emphatically stated that subpoenas were the primary tool for this committee and for Congress to be able to get at necessary information to do its work, without which, frankly, would be defenestrated. And that,
Now, bear in mind, the topic at hand, and this is delightful in its own right, is subpoenas for that bleach blonde anchor baby, Ivanka Trump. Just so you know.
advocating passionately for the issuance of subpoenas so that we can compel cooperation in the issuance of documents and witnesses. Would that surprise my friend, given what we just heard?
I wasn't here then, but it would not surprise me that our friend Mr. Jordan was a very effective champion of legislative oversight in the use of the subpoena power in order to get the information that Congress needs.
Jesus, sarcasm at that level is going to burn through Jim Jordan like the molecular acid that the alien dripped in the first Alien movie that went all the way through the hull of the ship.
And I think that Congress should be doing that regardless of who the president is.
If my friend would further yield, please. Is my friend saying we ought to be consistent in our views about the importance of subpoenas irrespective of the topic at hand?
I understand that partisanship is built into our system in some sense, as the founders thought it's built into human nature, but I think all of us have to struggle to be as consistent as we can be.
By the way, Jamie Raskin, it really is a constitutional scholar. So when he talks about what the founders and the framers thought, he's talking about things that he has devoted his life to studying. He is a real constitutional scholar, as opposed to a self-appointed, made-up one like, say, Mike Lee of Utah.
In terms of conducting the oversight that the American people want us to do. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I happily yield back.
Mr. Jordan.
Well, I would just point out, did Ivanka Trump set up an unofficial server in her home exclusively to conduct all official business on?
My friend asking a question of me?
Both you and the gentleman from Maryland were about this issue. I'm just asking, did she do that? Because I know someone who did.
Well, Mr.
Oh, by the way, Jim Short still can't find his jacket because he's still on strike against wearing sport coats against all those hussies who dress any old way they want to and get to wear pants. You know, the women people there in the House of Representatives. As long as they get to wear pants, Jim Jordan's not going to wear a jacket.
Mr. Jordan, I mean, every lawbreaker,
Every lawbreaker, every rule breaker has his or her own M.O. Ouch. But it's going to get better, or worse, depending on how you want to look at it.
Wait a minute, hold on. Wait a minute.
I'll let him finish.
You know, one at a time. I want us to go back to regular order, and if you're gonna yield to the gentleman back and forth, so then we can keep some order.
They referenced me multiple times, so I thought I'd ask them a question since they asked me.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is I'm allowing you to do that. I just want one person to speak at a time. That's all.
Did Ivanka Trump set up an unofficial server exclusively at her home to conduct official business on?
No, as far as I know, she did not. Everybody breaks rules in their own way.
No, she did not. No, she did not. But you know who did. And for the express purpose of evading
Hillary,
the records law, the person who did that was Secretary Clinton. Ms. Trump had a few emails when she first started working at the White House, and once she discovered what the law says, she gave those over and kept those records. Plain.
Time out. Time the out. So I'm to understand, are we to understand that Ivanka the anchor baby is a surefire, no kidding, wily coyote super genius who is capable of being an advisor to the president and trying to interject herself into complex international negotiations and interrupt discussions between actual holders of office in Europe? What the fuck does she spend her time doing? Anybody? Because it's kind of hard to have missed the entire last several years' worth of Hillary hissies as promulgated by the Republican Party, of which she is not at least nominally a member by virtue of her attachment to her grimy, gross, filthy, perverted, sickening old father. But
she never heard any of that. And she was utterly clueless about the fact that you're not supposed to use private email for government business. And so she went about doing that even though, even after the inauguration of the nitwit Nero. At no point in time during the transition did anybody say, oh, by the way, Ivanka, you can't use your Hotmail account anymore for government. If you're going to do government business, you can't. Nobody said that to her. Yeah, I know.
And simple, every single one. And her lawyer told that to this committee when he came in and talked to us.
Yeah, you know, her lawyer said that she'd turned over every single email. The only problem is every time a member of the Trump administration or a representative of the Trump family shows up in Congress, when they even bother to show up, it turns out they lie. Hope Hicks lied. Michael Cohen lied. Wilbur Ross lied. Steve Mnuchin lied. Lying. It's what they do. So I guess Jim Shorts Jordan is just gullible enough to believe anything that comes out of their mouths. But, you know, maybe the rest of the body, not quite so stupid.
So this is completely different. And yet you guys want to make it the same. Although I do remember you all defending Clinton when she had 60,000 emails on a private server and sent classified information received classified information on that server. And, oh, by the way, she got to decide which ones we were going to get to see. She didn't turn them all over like Ms. Trump has done.
Would the gentleman yield?
Turn them all over like Mr. Kushner has done.
Would the gentleman yield?
And in just a second, she didn't do that. In fact, what did she do? She destroyed 30,000. So this is completely different. But
check in with Julius Geezer. She had them acid washed, you know, just like Ivanka's jeans are.
We know how the votes are going to go. We know what you guys are going to do here.
Would my friend you?
Sure.
I would just simply say, if my friend believes what he just said, and if he's accurate, then he has nothing to fear by the issuance of these subpoenas.
Well, but these subpoenas are for all kinds of things. It's much broader than official records. You want all kinds of personal things, too. That's the problem. This is scary. When this is going to be the standard.
But
this is going to be the standard, this is scary. You want personal information from people.
Yeah, it's scary to want personal information from people who are fucking criminals. Well, then again, he's Jim Shorts Jordan, and he turned a blind eye to boy rape. Yeah, well, I guess. But it's about to get even worse. Steve in New York pointing out, Jim Shorts. Literally everything he said was a lie, but I digress.
That is scary. If it's official, get the official record, sure. But that's not what this subpoena is about. Who was asking? I'm sorry. Who was asking? Yes, the gentleman. I'd be happy.
Thank you so much. This is pretty.
This is where it gets bad because this is one of those uppity members of the squad, and she's. That, you know, it never works out for these fuckwits when they get taken to task by one of those uppity ethnic ladies. No, this in particular is Representative Rashida Tlaib.
Unprecedented that we are trying to protect family members right now of this administration. These are people that have access, but our ranking member needs to understand.
Hold on, I'll let you finish. Hold on 1 second. What's unprecedented is the fact that this committee
is... We're talking about the daughter of the president who has...
See, she's not going to let him overtalk her. She's not going to take no shit from a mouthy maggot man. She's going to follow the rules and she's going to be nice. But she's not going to be... quieted. So in comes the gavel, and Elijah Cummings is going to sort of reset the stage.
Has access to information.
Mr. Tlaib, he has the time. I assume.
And I'm going to let her back. I just want to say what's unprecedented is the nature of this subpoena and the personal information it's going after.
Let him finish, and then he'll yield to you. All right?
I yield.
Oh, you're yielding now? All right, Ms. Salib.
I think it's really important for my colleagues to understand that we're talking about transparency and talking about oversight. These are messages that impact the American people, that right now all I hear is this fear from the other side of information that might come about Ivanka, and we got to protect the, you know, that's all I hear is that you're choosing to protect family members of this current administration that have access to information. They are at the table making decisions on behalf of the American people. They don't have any privacy anymore. They also have to be accountable to us in this chamber. And Mr. Chairman and Ranking Member, I understand that you want to talk about the specific processes and want to go back and forth about Hillary Clinton.
But understand that you
are protecting someone that is at the table now.
This subpoena is for personal emails, who their domestic help is. Who's watching their? That's ridiculous. That is
really, it's ridiculous to find out, to want to find out if precious Ivanka it might be, I don't know, employing undocumented immigrants and paying them substandard wages to look after her little gits. That's ridiculous. That's unprecedented. Look, pattern and practice. The Trumps routinely use and abuse undocumented immigrants in their relentless pursuit of money. The American people have a right to know that.
It's completely off the table. Mr. Chairman.
Would you please, just one last point, Ranking Member, please, just 30 seconds. It stopped becoming personal when they got access into the room. It stopped becoming personal when they got security clearances. It stopped becoming personal when they're in the room making decisions that impact the American people. Okay. And they also are sitting at the Trump Organization businesses table as well making decisions. Remember that. Fear that. Because no matter if there's an R or D next to our name, fear the fact that we have corporations, people
Mr.
sitting
Chairman,
at the
table. Mr. Chairman, I want to reclaim my time. I'm reclaiming my time.
He's reclaiming his time. Because he's had his ass handed to him. Yeah. Hey, gym shorts. Feeling something missing back there? Is this yours? It was a zany and a wacky time there in the House today. And it particularly didn't go well for poor old Chip Roy of Syphilis Springs or Chlamydia Creek or Dribblin' Dick, Texas, or wherever it is he's from. He had a hissy. By the way, Darlene in Connecticut says, let's not forget Zoe Baird. Let's not. Steve in New York says, well, isn't she just uppity? Yes, and that's why they hate her. She has the unmitigated temerity to talk back to good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, white men's. We can't have that. No. Oh, by the way, and going back, by the way, to... Catherine Clark and her patriotic statement that we must impeach. Kitty in Boston says, tuning in late, but I did hear you mention Representative Catherine Clark of Massachusetts coming out in favor of Trump's impeachment. Yay! Indeed. Did you also see that my Senator Ed Markey called for impeachment today on the floor of the Senate? Good for him. I did see that. He said, Mueller's testimony and the president's obstruction of the congressional investigation compel us to immediately begin a formal impeachment inquiry. And remember, Ed Markey came to the Senate from the House, so he has an almost encyclopedic understanding of the workings of both bodies. Good for Ed Markey. And now back to Chip Roy from Gonorrhea Gulch. Chip's having a bad day, too, because he's got he's now officially got a challenger for November of 2020. Wendy Davis has announced that she will run for his seat. And I'd say she's got a better than even chance. Name recognition, the ability to fundraise, and, well, not being Chip Roy of Herpes Holler, Texas, or wherever it is he's from. Yeah, Chip, he had a Chip Nipshin.
Consistently.
And Mr. Chairman, will you yield for a question?
I'm out of time.
Mr. Roy. I think the chairman, it would strike me as important for us to figure out what on earth we're trying to find. Are we trying to find that Ivanka Trump somehow is engaged in a conspiracy to cover up emails relating to the death of an ambassador in Libya? Are we trying to dive into emails that are dealing with dead Americans in Libya? Because we know that's what kicked off the issue with respect to the email controversy regarding the former Secretary of State. And that was what was being discussed. So my question here is, when we've got Ms. Trump acknowledging through her attorney in discussions with this committee, turning over emails to this committee, acknowledging that there was a window of time at transition where she used private email for business.
You know, these fuckers may be members of the Spacing Guild, too. Because anytime you talk about one of about you know the criminal conduct of the Trump criminal family, lo and behold, son of a gun, they fold space, and the next thing you know, well, I mean, hell, they fold time too, and we're back talking about Benghazi. Holy smokes! You say Ivanka Trump email, which is, and it is basically, it's a sauce for the goose, sauce for the gander kind of thing. They had a years long hissy over a controversy that they themselves and Fox News ginned up, and which they admitted that they ginned up solely to attack the or harm the presidential campaign and ambitions of Hillary Clinton. And so if you want to apply the same standard to a member of the Trump family, then you get Chip Roy. I know. Steve in New York says, it really just was her emails, Benghazi. Yep, Chip Roy and his Benghazi butthurt. But again, this will play well on Fox, and it'll play great with the audience of one.
...that may have been public. Why are we asking for emails from January of 17 to present? When she's acknowledged to this committee, and we've had a window of time where she said she's got some emails on her private servers and turning that over, it is clear that this is a fishing expedition. And not because it's the daughter of the president. It could be any member of the White House, related to the president or not.
Yeah, and they don't respond to subpoenas either. They're representing Roy from Papaloma Pond.
But we're engaged in this open-ended inquiry, right? I mean, where is the probable cause here? Where is the reasonable suspicion here about what kind of wrongdoing was undertaken by the emails that were used if it was a Gmail account versus some sort of official account? What are we actually looking for as an oversight body?
You know what's kind of interesting is that's not part of the process at all. Law says you don't do that. She did that. Let's find out what she did when she was breaking the law. because it's a violation of the law. And we used to actually think that we were a nation of laws and not of persons, but, well, maybe not anymore.
Keeping my time?
Sure. I don't know how to say this any differently. You know, we have laws. And the laws say we keep official records. I mean, come on now. We don't have, you know, go around probable cause. You talk about the official records. And we're not asking, by the way, for personal records. You understand that?
Yeah, well, Mr. Chairman, but I might, and I can yield to the distinguished ranking member in a second, but I understand that. And we should comply right. with the laws. My understanding is she's working exactly. to comply with the laws in response to the request from this body. My understanding is she's turning over emails in response to it and making those records public. That's what the laws are saying, to make them part of the Presidential Records Act. This is something that I think is critically important to this whole debate. Why are we doing this? Because they're working with us to comply with the law, to turn over the information.
Well, Chipper, the chairman explained that to you, but apparently you're otne ute aitbre, if you own what I mean. It is for the purpose of fulfilling the duties imposed by a duly passed and signed into law federal statute. But even if you talk slow to them, these maggots, and even if you only use little one-syllable words, you can't teach someone who is utterly disinterested in learning. You know, all that business about how you can lead a pig to the mud hole, but you can't make him take a shower.
To follow what the chairman was just saying, in the meantime, while we are doing this, while we are sitting here, as I pointed out before, for the hour we're going to be debating this, another $100 million of debt's been racked up. Another how many thousands of people are poured
Oh, isn't he just precious? He's all worried about the debt. Now, he might be a freshman. And, you know, trying to make a name for himself or something. He might be a freshman. And it could be that he wasn't there to vote for the great big giant humongous tax giveaway to Trump's cronies. But even if that's the case, given the opportunity, he would have gladly driven the debt through the goddamn roof. And if ever given the opportunity, we'll do so as early and often as possible. But that's just the first objection. Oh, yeah. Because you know what else? The ISIS MS-13 cartels.
Across our border. How much more control have we yielded to cartels who truly control and run our border? That's what we're dealing about. We've got a text. I get information right here from someone.
Yeah, from someone, you know, probably, you know, Free Republic or Newsmuck or something like that. Yeah, information, damn it. He gets information. All about how the cartels are running the border. Yeah, it's the cartels that are keeping the kids in the cages. It's the cartels that are letting little children die. Sure. Yeah, it might be worth noting, in fact, I think it is, that the young man who is an American citizen and was held for 3 weeks in one of our concentration camps in Texas, taken by the Border Patrol, even though he had a Texas ID, and you can't get a Texas ID without a Social Security number, and you can't get a Social Security number without being an American citizen. He was stuffed in a concentration camp, not allowed any contact with his family, nothing. Well, he lost 24, we found this out recently. He lost 24 pounds, I believe it was. He was 23 days in the custody, the tender mercies of the Customs and Border Patrol and the ICE thugs. He's an American citizen. I'm sorry, I was wrong. They starved him, and he lost 26 pounds. They denied him the ability to clean himself. And he, a teenager, was stuffed into a concentration camp enclosure with 60 full-grown men. Sadly, no one sent that text message to old Chip Roy, sent to the Congress by a bunch of people in his district that is probably gerrymandered all the fuck. And who couldn't care less about an American citizen being stuffed in an ICE concentration camp because he's not a really good American, the young fella. I mean, if he was a good American, well, he'd have a good American name like Chip Roy, and he'd live in a decent place. Chlamydia Creek. But, see, his name, the young man's name, is Francisco Irwin Galicia. Not a good, upstanding American name like Roy. You understand the difference? Yeah, of course. Steve in New York says, I wish the chairman had done this. Gavel every Republican down. Grant them no time to speak and take a vote on the impeachment. Let them know we can play the shut-the-fuck-up game, too. I understand. Laws, asks Ron in Raleigh. We don't obey no stinking laws during the reign of King Donald I. You remember the law that says tax returns shall be surrendered upon request from the Finance Committee? Which, as I understand it, means fucking shall. Yet the king's head of treasury said, no dice, and guess what? No tax returns. We are no longer a country of laws. And it is the desperate and determined effort to return to being one that animates, in part, the resistance. But Chip wants to talk about his text messages, you understand.
On the front lines, on the border, saying, I will tell you, my station, this is Border Patrol, my station has around 500 total agents, around 70 for the day shift, around 90 for swings, and around 80 for midnight shift. I'm averaging between 9 to 14 on the line for day shift. They've halted the horse patrol detail and made them security at McAllen. They're making our elite and highly trained BORTAC do the same. Detention security. All the agencies that are helping us are doing detention security, hospital watch, sandwich making, handing out hygienic items, and milk and transportation. My Army unit was called up. What are we doing? We're building new detention facilities in the border. They're not patrolling the border. We're not doing anything to stop and deal with the problems that we've got with cartels managing the border. And we're sitting here in a fishing expedition for emails alleging that we're trying to do that in compliance with the law that's being complied with. In what universe is this what we're supposed to be doing for the United States of America, for the people of this country, who are watching their country racking up mountains of debt, $320 billion over existing spending levels, which would still give us a $1 trillion deficit?
You know, that $1 trillion deficit that was driven by the Republican tax cut. Somehow that never makes it into his diatribe. Yeah. Back to young Mr. Galicia. James in Illinois asks, I'm wondering about all his cellmates. They all need a get-out-of-jail-free card. Yeah, he's God damn, our Border Patrol agents are making sandwiches. Now, you know what? They wouldn't be doing that if they weren't, if they hadn't created a bunch of fucking concentration camps. Because I'm pretty sure people aren't leaving Guatemala because they've heard about the awesome sandwiches made at the concentration camps by Border Patrol officers. Oh, Chip was full of piss and vinegar today.
Well done, Congress. Well done. And you're going to have that kind of level of spending while we've got wide open borders. What are we doing for the people of the United States? I'm going to be told, oh, we're protecting the law. The law is being complied with. When instead what it is a fishing expedition for political purposes, which we saw on high display yesterday in the room next door, where we got nothing other than dawdling responses about an incompetent effort. And here we sit, mounting up debt for our children and grandchildren. My 9-year-old son is in this room. We all have families. What are we passing down to them? $100 million of debt per hour? It's extraordinary.
Wait a minute.
Wide open.
Did he just use his 9-year-old son as a meat shield? Because I'm pretty sure he did. Stay classy, Chip. Stay classy.
Borders. Destroying communities. Endangering lives of Americans in South Texas while I get smirks from my Democratic colleagues. While there are people right now facing attacks from cartels. Dealing with it on a daily...
Oh, dear. The people in Dribbling Dick are under attack from the ISIS MS-13 cartel. Heaven forfend. Oh, but Chip's serious now, and his son knows it because Chip's waving his iPhone. I don't know. Might be an Android. Goodness me. Such histrionics.
Basis, and we get smirks, and we get requests for emails from people in the White House. This is the face of the Democratic Party. This is the face of your...
And with every this, he waves his arms so that because, you know, nine-year-old Chip Jr. knows that when Daddy starts waving his arms, that he really means business.
Congress today, America.
Good job, Chip. Good job.
Mr. Connolly.
I thank the chair.
Sat back in his chair as if he was ready to stand up and go for his six shooter.
I thank the chair. I have a motion. I do want to just say, shame on my colleague from Texas.
No.
To question the motivation of Democrats.
Shame on this body.
Yeah, I know. We've heard from you. It's my time.
And you'll continue to hear from me. In defense of this country.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, he's defending the country. My God. It's his own personal fucking Alamo. He's Chip Roy of Chlamydia Creek. What a piece of shit he is. And Jerry Connolly, who's been doing this since longer than Chip Roy. Well before he ever had the first urge to take the long, dusty hike out of Gonorrhea Gulch. Jerry Connolly says, yeah, I know, it's my time. We've heard from you. And that, well, that don't mess with Texas. Well, that gets Chip's dander up. There's just seconds remaining.
He has the time.
I have the time.
America deserves the time.
Yeah. America deserves better than what it just heard from, Mr. Mr. Chairman, I have a motion.
Taking his ball and going home. Bye.
Ooh! Damn, he fucked with the squad again. Maybe it wasn't the squad. It was, yeah. He's, because bold, manly, patriotic American for America, Texan Chip Roy, got up once he had been handed his ass and stomped out of the hearing room, at which point you heard what you heard. He's taking his ball and going home. Ah! They can't stand. They can't stand the ridicule. Let's enjoy those last few moments again.
It's fine. And you'll continue to hear from me in defense of this country.
Mr. Chairman.
Hold up. He has the time.
I have the time.
America deserves the time.
Yeah. America deserves better than what I just heard from, Mr. Mr. Chairman, I have a motion.
Taking his ball and going home. Bye.
Recognized for the time.
Mr. Chairman, I move the previous question on the amendment in the nature of a substitute.
The question is on ordering the previous question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
Hey, y'all. It's been a mess all evening. I got to close the program early. Sorry about this. We'll talk soon. Back for Friday on the front porch tomorrow. Later, y'all.